No, no, it's...
We don't want to get you tomorrow by the department. So, DJ, to have some questions and that's some responsibility. Only for the company.
Perhaps let me ask, there was a question about the top slices of the library card. The top slice of the library card actually allows us to top slice until 7% of the library card. That is used for two purposes. We transfer some of that money for systems development to a national library. That is an amount of 3 million rands. 4 million rand of that is used for us to monitor the crowd. That's what that money is used for. So it's project that we can monitor. Couple of questions were asked about where do we have people actually go to the ground and check on these levels whether they are a little bit built. That is what we use that money. It's for the monitoring of what province are doing on the ground. Let me also spend a bit of time on the ground. There was a question here whether the people on the ground know what is happening. Grants are submitted, or the business plans for the grants are submitted by provinces. But most of those business plans actually emanate from the IDPs of the municipalities. Communities say in the IDP, you recall that the philosophy of IDPs, that it's a local plan, but all things of government should contribute to the realization of the plan. Now, communities say that in their IDP that they want a library here, a library this week, and then they submit, the municipality submit that to the provincial government. And that's what goes into the business plan. We assess a business plan, we see whether it's viable, we look at various things, the performance criteria, and then we submit that to Treasury. And that is what the basis on which we allocate that. Now, the basis on which money is allocated is based on a couple of things. One is based on the need in the various provinces. The need is varied across the province. But also it's based on the capacity to spend. Most provinces, are reliant on their public works. Most provinces, the Department of Arts and Culture, none of the provinces actually have ability to go and construct them. They use the Department of Public Works or other different entities. I know the percentage is using Eastern Cape is using the Poha Development Corporation, which is owned by the development corporation owned by the provincial government. So different provinces are using different mechanisms to ensure that they deliver on the government. Now, what has been happening with the library card, which will call that some of the provinces in fact used to transfer the grant to municipalities. We have discouraged provinces from doing that. Except two provinces, except county members. Why? Because some of the metropolitan councils are actually larger than the provinces. They've got better capacity than them. So we have agreed that because they've demonstrated that they've got capacity, they can transfer their grant. However, we should consider that we have problems in the Northwest with labor money disappearing and all sorts of other things. So probably are implementing the labor grant, except those two provinces. And even those two provinces, also in the metros where there is capacity to deliver on the rest of the areas, are done directly by the provincial governments. We've got a committee within ourselves in the provinces that actually monitors the expenditure on grants. Last year, at the beginning of the year, we experienced a problem, we called up problems, we found solutions on how the grants can be spent. And we are seeing an increase in how the problems are actually spent. If you look at the trend throughout the year, the length of grants normally spent, they don't spend a lot in the first quarter. That differs from province to province, obviously. But most of the time it's because the first quarter is normally used for preparatory work. It's part of preparatory stuff that goes on to there. It's not necessarily construction. Most of the money for libraries goes towards the actual construction, the building, and the brick and mortar. And that's why it actually increases as the year goes, the second quarter, the third quarter, the fourth quarter. Unfortunately, the fourth quarter is normally where most of the money really flows because that's where the rents are implemented. There was a question around what is a new library. A new library is actually a construction for a new place. That is that might not be the only one in the particular community, but actually the construction for a new level from scratch. And the upgrading refers normally to two things. One is either physical upgrade of the library, either it's extension or innovation of the library, or in certain instances, it's upgrading of the system that actually supports the library. The metal material is made up of renovations for the community. There are very few instances where we are other renovations. And by the way, now we book the audit in such a condition, so that, I mean, all of what we purchase is actually going into the assets of a particular library in a particular property, so that there's a consistency of all of this material. The issue of the site clearance certificate, and I do agree that this is a problem. But this is the situation. When you want to construct a facility, you go to the municipality, you present them with a plan. They approve the plan. Then they give two sites clearance. The first clearance, site clearance is that it's the approval of the plan. But once the plan is approved, it doesn't mean that you can actually go to the, onto the ground and start clearing the flat and start digging. They've got to go and do the actual inspection of the sites before they come in. Now, from what we are told in the Eastern Cape, that's what the process is like. It's at a municipal level. They need to go and actually do the, do the actual inspection in order to approve the site purpose. Now, taking this up with the municipality and with the province in order to fast track this process. In fact, this project is being done on our behalf by the ITT. We met, in fact, with the ITT just yesterday. So this is one of the projects that has been brought in, what we can do together in order to unblock this project and get them to move them forward. So we are working with these things to ensure that these things are being done. I must share that there is a one of the things where we are finding some difficulty, despite what we're doing, if we need to transfer the site, if it's property that does not belong to the Eastern Cape, because we need to buy this property and transfer. Now, we cannot do the transfer ourselves. That is done on our behalf by public works. I never want to come and blame another department, because it's part of government. But the truth of the matter is that you can't touch a site if you don't have ownership of the site. You can't dig a foundation on a property that is not ours. Some of our projects have been stuck there, but we are working together with the ITT and the Department of Public Works. That's what we're doing. If I may ask, you speak just quickly on some of the spoken about the Labour Club. The human resource development strategy, the heritage, if you can just.
Thank you very much, sir. I think the DG has covered the number of issues quite well. So I would only comment on the issues that the DG has spoken to. The chairperson raised the question of the human resource development strategy. And the chairperson did that because it was the conference of the maybe the approach that I would use is the one that says, first and foremost, I think we need to look at the gravity of the issue that we're talking about when we talk about the human resource development strategy. first thing that was done by the department was to do the audit of skills within the heritage. And so Chairperson agreed with me that if you have to do this, you have to go through the institutions, first and foremost, national institutions, institutions at the commission level, institutions at local government level, and also you have to transcend and go to private institutions, because the idea here is to say, do you have the necessary skills for the management of heritage in the country, whether that heritage is public hands or private hands. So I'm just putting this before you, honorable members, comment, because I want you to look also at the detail that you have to get into. And within the department, you might, you know, we don't have that kind of, I'm talking about the time that you need to really visit all these institutions, sitting down with the management of those institutions, taking down and recording all those things. You really need some kind of specialized skill so that you can actually be efficient in doing what you do. And of course, once we have done that audit, we then went on to then say, here is the picture we need. Now, given this situation, let's now develop a strategy to sort of close these skill gaps. And also that requires some kind of in terms of, say, how do we do this workshopping, you know, you come up with a concept, workshopping different stakeholders to ensure that whatever you come up with as a human resource development strategy, it's actually something that has kind of precedence. So I just want to let me indicate that, just to demonstrate that the detail that you have to attempt to when you do these things, and also the specialized nature of that work, that it actually compels us to move beyond our own resources in the department. And then the other issue that was raised was the issue of oral history. Also here, we are working with different stakeholders in the community. It's not necessarily a project solely driven by the department. Also here, we work with various institutions. We get academics from different institutions to come in terms of providing the means. But also, not only academic institutions, I'm asking, we're also working with organic interests. Those people that have not gone to school, but by the virtue of them being exposed to this information, leads to certain historical inputs, they are better positioned to really give us more information. And then when it comes to the implementation of these projects, we work with provinces, as you can see, remember that we have been going through the province last year, it was not this year, it was this state. And of course, through the riders of the province, they are the ones who have in terms of saying these are the schools that were most appropriate to actually train. But of course, we expect that, you know, the department is doing more and also implementing it at a much more national level. But the expectation province to roll out this particular strategy of connecting these employees, even local government, to do that, because they've got unsung heroes and heroines at various levels, at various localities, so it becomes very much important that their focus is not only on national government. I think that these are the issues that we address that I need to speak to, because the issue of next, what I picked up from the members of the committee is that they were kind of giving us input and advice indicating how urgent it is that we should speed up the process of getting the service provider should roll out the implementation of the national plan. But also in honorable months our actions and but also maybe one which came up as a question was how do we sort of select schools where they for instance in the other day for instance there are schools and last year it was in the book. Also then, we are guided by communities in terms of saying, here at the schools, there is like a school of national department can very much go through the problems and identify schools there, but we are at the next level of our provincial campus to guide us where we should implement this process. But of course, those gaps that Honorable Mumbai has actually indicated that some work was done and it was moving and showed that it is a problem of the supervisor.
Chair, thank you. I will be responding to three issues. The one being the criteria used over time. The other issue, and I don't really think I can add anything to what the DG has said regarding the fixed term contracts and consultants. So I think that has been just one aspect maybe is what we also insist on when we engage with consultants, service level agreements, is that there is a transfer of skill. If we do not have that skill, we insist that during that engagement that the transfer of skill takes place. The issue about the people with disabilities, the question, what is the target? The annual target by 31 March 2013 is 2%, which is in line with the national target that has been set by government. Our quarterly target is 1.5, so we gradually intend moving towards attaining a 2%. We currently have a 1.6%, which represents 7 employees in the department, 7 out of a staff complement of 140. So if one had to really play with figures, you would say that we need to appoint 2 people more to achieve the target of 2%, but we're not steering ourselves blind against it, only the 2 people. That's absolutely the minimum. We're quite confident that we will be achieving a 2% plus by the end of March, especially since we will now be filling quite a number of positions moving forward until the end of the financial year. Chair, with regard to the criteria used for working overtime, there are very strict provisions and rules that we have in our overtime policy. One of which being is that you cannot merely claim overtime, or you cannot claim paid overtime if you have an additional workload or if there's too much work or too little stock to do the work. Overtime is purely linked to a particular project that needs to be completed. It only applies, as the DG I think said, for staff to build 1 to 12, which is your below senior management. So senior managers, although they work overtime, they're not allowed to claim pay overtime. And a lot of the projects, as was highlighted in our presentation, it was Freedom Day, it was Youth Day, and a couple of others, the financial statements as well, which was also, one can say, a project. Most of these events, through the nature of the business of the department or the mandate, is that a lot of these commemorative days fall on public holidays. Now, a public holiday for a public servant is a day that you're supposed to be on leave. So if you work on that particular day, then that is regarded as overtime. And what it really involves is events management. We have quite a big role, although we do appoint service providers to assist us in some of these projects. There needs to be monitoring, evaluation, oversight, and in some instances, leadership as well. There's a lot of marketing that goes into these projects as well. Functions such as ushering, the accreditation process, security on the day as well. As the DG said, spends quite a significant amount of overtime, especially in the first quarter, because of these projects. And we are, as a management team, we have noted that, and we're trying to bring down that overtime. It will, however, not be necessary to do away with it completely, because, as I said, some of these projects do fall over during public holidays and often during weekends as well. I think those were the questions related to HR that I wanted to cover.
Yeah, but
the tremendous
question from the level of Thank you, Siji. Another volunteer, there are quite a few questions that have been raised on that, but I'll try to keep it. The first one, of course, about the new terminologies that are being implemented. How do we see from the international issue? I think that's a very important question, because indeed, you know, these terminologies are not just about for the sake of the problem. They have reached their leaders, because it indicated the intention is to sort of enhance the quality of the in instances where we can afford, we do produce the hard copies. some may have seen some of the what we call mathematical, what we call the terms of dictionaries that have been produced before, including the 2010 terms, I mean soccer terms. But we try as much as possible to have all of the developed terminologies, because it is in the departmental website, and they can be. So we have them in some instances in hard copies as well as electronic copies, but the majority of them have electronic forms. And then another question was about the bazaars. The Honourable Member wanted to get more information about the bazaars. Yes, I just want to start off by saying that having the universities that were talking and there are five. That's the Libopo, University of UNISA, UJ, University of Zulu, and also Walters. And how do we select these universities? Honorable members of the court, when we were deciding to address this meeting, we also said that a set of criteria that we use when selecting these universities. I not necessarily have to go through that, but the books are available. But perhaps suffice to mention that since this is part of the skill of the university, in fact, do not offer certain courses that relate to specific skills, do not stand a great chance. So, for example, the skills that I can just quickly mention, which need to be part of personal skills that can be classified in the university, include the translation and editing skills, the interpreting skills, the program. Making terminology development that we're talking about, human language technologies, etc. So we do not just sit and then decide to give users to evaluate their applications and their programs and follow all the guidelines that have been at the end of that. And then another question was around the translation. Say that the documents that we translate, of which we have seen from the clients, who are the clients? The clients are the government departments, if you like to say, all the official states. And what is important about this is to mention that this is not for commercial reasons. This is government translating for government to translate, but we do not charge. And all organs of state are free and just receive documents and do all of them if they have capacity of their own to do the translation and everything they do. But if they do not, then they send them to the municipality to translate for them if they have capacity. And then the other question was around the terminologies that are being developed, the languages in which the terminology is. And particularly the question was asking if this refers to the previous research language of shared language. And the answer is correct, yes, that refers to those languages, including Afrikaans. And also to mention that, of course, when you have to develop terminology, start from the source text. And most of these, like, as we have mentioned earlier, that most of these projects are curriculum based. We're talking about mathematics and then the source text, and most of them is in English, and then except terms, except source text. And then we do not leave behind any of the official languages. Doing so, we need to say all the things that are official, that terminology is developed. And And then the other issue was about the quality check, quality control. Yes, that is a very important question to raise. But the answer really lies in the process of the methodology that is being followed. As the department, we do have links, but it's not only the links. They partake mostly at the what you call first aid, where you are starting terms from the first text, but that doesn't really need that highly specialized knowledge. But once you have all that, then the actual work begins when you develop the fever. That is, if you have extracted all the terms from the ink source, and then if the group that is working for Chisoma will be developing the fever into and so on and so forth. But it's quite a very intensive process. Once you have done that, and then you begin now to rope in all the rest of the stakeholders. And that includes linguists, either from the universities, over and above those that are from the department, as well as the such specialists. In this case, if you're talking about developing mathematics terms, not only going to be the language people who are going to be involved in that, it's going to be the language people together with the mathematicians themselves. If it is physics, you'll definitely need to have physics there so that they can give you the actual meaning and understanding of the text. So this knowledge is kind of complementary. The language side as well as subject specialist side. But also involved as it is, but it also goes on to the last phase of verification. The verification is like where, when all these who are involved are satisfied, that is a chance that you can agree and say that they are actually equivalent of these. And then you present the national language body. We have the national language bodies for all the official languages in South Africa. We're talking about this is the national language body. We're meaning the specialists in it is all over the country, irrespective of where they come from, for as long as they are specialists in issues. And so they will be sitting and looking together with the committee that has worked on the chain and ratifying and certifying if they are satisfied to say that these are the terms that we can agree on saying that they are available for these functions in the country. And then, of course, there is the question of the number of students that the Honorable Chair needs. Yes, also we have included the numbers that we have received from the universities so far, the students that have registered in the universities that have mentioned earlier. But with respect to where do they come from, well, that information we do not have, but it's an information that we may still get from universities upon request. But also, I think it is important to mention, because there was also a question of how do people or how do students know about these programs. That in the contract that we signed with universities, we have actually included the issue of giving them an application, because the universities are administered this program in these bursaries. In the contract, they have an obligation to market and develop strategies for marketing the language products. And of course, that is coupled with the recruitment programs that we generally use to recruit students for their own programs in general. But also, the universities are mainly national universities. And the expectation is that their catchment area are really national, making these programs go nationwide. And of course, some universities may not only have the national, but in the program. But I think that covers the questions that were raised on the issue of language.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Just
before I answer the specific question on Ireland, maybe to give a brief report on, and I'm speaking specifically on film treaties, to give a brief report on the fact that as of December we have signed 8 treaties to date. We have got 74 official productions that have taken place under the signed treaty. And we have a total of 7.4 billion by the total budget of those treaties, and half of that amount has been spent in South Africa. So basically, really the purpose of signing film treaties, one is to share and maximize on the similarities of the offerings, you know, of both countries in terms of incentives, in terms of the location, the practitioners working together, the facilities. That's the overall profile of the country that our filmmakers share. But most importantly is also to share the budget, because South African filmmakers often don't have enough funds to bring with. So the official treaties are based on 80-20 or 60%-40 or 50-50 in some cases. So the last one is also to expand on distribution, simply because South Africa doesn't really have a big market when it comes to consuming films. It is also to really maximize on the distribution with other countries. With Ireland, New Zealand, and Australia, those are three countries that are very similar in offering with South Africa in terms of the location, the weather, the facilities, and just general offering. So that was one of the choices. We do have a treaty with New Zealand, we do have a treaty with Australia, and Ireland is one of them, including Canada, which is the most active treaty. But also, sometimes, you know, we run treaties because the practitioners themselves are already working among themselves, either than not necessarily under a treaty. It's one of the reasons that we started Ireland. Notwithstanding the fact that we've been in negotiation with Ireland, I think for almost 5 years, and I hope that is a fine.
If I may request, Mr. Lee, would you respond to some of the questions around youth programs?
Thank you, DG. Good afternoon, our members and chairperson. The questions that I raised were really around the historic tour that was held. This was an inaugural tour. It has been held for the first time. What we did, we are part of the IDC of the Youth Development Program, which is convened by the National Youth Development Agency. In fact, we do have even an agreement, an MOU with the National Youth Development Agency. So in the planning stages of what has to occur or the program for the youth month for this year, one of the discussions that we entered into was that there needs to be an awareness raised about history and heritage of the country among young people. And therefore the project My Historic Tour was born. And in doing it, it was then inaugurated in Gauteng, the whole thing was around looking at it also as a build-up to other programs of the Youth Month and the Youth Day, which was held in PE, and the people that were selected or the letters were from six regions of Gauteng particularly. And then it was looking at 25 performing learners to be part of this program. So the grades that were, it was mainly targeted learners that are at grade 11 and 12, and the sites that were chosen in this case were sites of historic significance, particularly linked to youth uprising of 1976, Hector Peterson Memorial, Moses Isaacson School. So the youth then walked the sort of work that is called the tour that the youth of 1976 followed. In response to the youth in Mbizo, the youth in Mbizo was held in Deep Slot, particularly because of a partnership that we had with the city of Johannesburg, and also particularly to strengthen the ministers in Mbizo. We also felt in the department that what was needed was that we hadn't popularized the Mzansi Golden Economy among young people. And as a proof that an ongoing strategy of the department, we did feel that we should use the partnership with the City of Johannesburg as a start, but also to look at a comprehensive rollout plan. As I'm talking to members, we do have a plan that we want to implement of popularizing this, not only among the youth, but even including persons with disability, women. For the month of August, for instance, we did talk about it being popularized in among women that are in the sector. So I hope this answers the two questions related to the youth month and a question that was raised by Honorable Member Mutran. Thanks.
Are there any questions that you have
Thank you very much, CD, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. Maybe just a question on rock art. The rock art project is a originated as a bilateral project between Mexico and South Africa, emanating from the cultural agreement between the two countries. But it has developed into a quadrilateral a project between four countries, including Botswana and Mozambique. And the reason it was specifically originated is because both Mexico and South Africa are internationally recognized as leading countries on the issues of rock art, although with complementary strengths. Particularly in the case of South Africa, we have very strong interpretive skills. The University of the Witwatersrand is one of the globally recognized institutions on rock art interpretation. They're also the only higher education institution to offer a postgraduate degree in studies, particularly in rock art, whereas Mexico is internationally recognized for its strength in preservation of rock art. So the two countries agree. The process was strengthened through the, or was consolidated during the visit by the President to Mexico 2 years ago, a state visit. There was also an acknowledgement of the centennial, the independence, as well as the abolition of slavery in Mexico. And at that point, the relationship between institutions, and this is what enriches the agreement tremendously, is that it is work primarily between academic institutions. DAC has facilitated the contact and, of course, supports the project, but it is a project between academic institutions. The bringing on board of Botswana and Mozambique, particularly because they have very rich rock art sites, and the intent was that the project would benefit the SADC area and not only South Africa and Mexico. And aspects of the collaboration looks at training of rock art experts, but it also looks at institution building, specifically in Mozambique and Botswana. It looks at awareness-raising campaigns and promotion of rock art as an ancient original art. Therefore, the exhibition, which is currently traveling to all the four countries, it was in South Africa for 3 months. It has now traveled to Botswana, it will go to Mozambique, and it will go to Mexico as well. And then, as I said, indicated the issues of preservation of the sites, the involvement of the local communities, where Mexico is also particularly strong, so it is a sharing of those skills and experiences. And it has been enormously successful and extremely well received by the communities, but also the academicians and the institutions involved. Thank you, DG.
Thank you, Chairperson, and Honourable Members. the chairperson actually asked questions around the progress on Tanzania. And then we got an opportunity to get that information from our colleagues. I'm glad to report, chairperson, that as we speak, about 95% understanding is 95% complete. Currently, they are actually doing the painting and the painting. So I think that there's work that's been done there. There is progress.
One of the issues that I I'll just put it to the wind, but I know it might be within me. I was trying to say to privileges, well, I'm directed and I'm like, oh, you know, we're going to go that way. I know you come to the issue of legislation when it comes to institute and this is the department. But I want to raise here, DJ. The manager is the reporter for the other people in the room. To say that I'm very concerned about how ADQ, I'm not sure whether they're talking to the about for the world of the day, whether the legislation with the defendant, with the, it gives them that way to her, like, to that is to the end of the day, the mind that is the money that is actually from the department, that the has been allocated to the department. And I would just ask you to look on the president, what has been the extension of the court, or not, how far is it, and not only from the court, but from the court, or, you know, we don't like to come in, especially with the affairs, what is like, it's going to be not working. So the first question they ask is, what is the department do? Even on this one of her, on this video question, what is the department do? And I don't think it's like control, they say, I don't know what the department do, you know. That's why I asked you about the court, this one, what is the department, what is the information. So, the way I would like to reach you, what won't do M&E, you know, and this is the question that I've always asked you. On M&E, how far how far do you go? You know, do you meet those people and the children, or whatever they are coming from? I think that's very important to me. Remember, is there any other thing for any comment that you want to raise? Okay. Thank you.
There's the municipality and the IDC and the issue of libraries. It was not really as well said. But I'm checking if what I think I'm understanding is what I said here, that this is the library that we're getting in the center. There must be issues that come the flag of municipality, so that's what you're saying. Yeah, okay, if it's set like that, do you think that is going to change? And will we end up in libraries? If you give this to the municipality, can't you kind of come up with a strategy that will ensure that nationally there is somebody making sure that there is a balance? Because we may take a long time to realize that, because what we need in fact are not at the not necessarily the same way. We have very strong research. So that even the one day that they can support it. But every day deserves, I think every day deserves an electric. I don't know if I make sense, but I think they need a plan to show that we have libraries, no matter where a particular municipality finds itself in this country. Then, if it's not put correct, I'm sure you can explain it to the person, so that it makes sense. Thank you.
Thank you, DG, thank you, Chair, thank you, Honourable Members. Yes, then you are right, we are not restricted by any legislation whatsoever to actually make sure that we monitor the activity and the functioning of the institutions. And recently we've done institutional visits to most of our institutions to sort of get a sense of what the key challenges, what the key issues, and also to outline what their responsibilities are and what is then expected of them in terms of compliance and also reporting to the Department of Arts and Culture, the National Department. But also, I think also we also in the process of finalizing the centralization of the governance function in the department. And I think it's an issue that needs to, I think I need to speak to, because the way that governance is arranged in the department is such that nine functions are responsible for monitoring and evaluation of their respective institutions. And basically one of the proposals that has been made in the department is that we need to centralize that and make sure that there is one point of contact and also monitoring the evaluation of these institutions. And we are in the process of analyzing that. But I agree with you, Chair. This is something that is we have actually clearly applied that to the institutions, that they need to submit their reports. But then we have to, as a department, also act on the reports that are submitted to us. And at the moment, until the centralization is sort of finalized, then we will then only then be able to do a coordinated monitoring evaluation of these institutions and be able to identify challenges and issues that are confronting those institutions and be able to act on those timelessly. Thank you.
Chair, I have a question.
Yes.
How we regionalize some of these programs.
Thank you, Chair, and honorable members. Honorable Moshwana, the questions that you have, well, the question that is a follow-up, I think that we are sitting at a very tight position as a national department. I think one of the realizations that we have come across as the IDC, the Interdepartmental Committee on Youth Development, is particularly that at national level you do have, the national youth policy says that at national level there should be, departments should have a directorate or even a chief directorate depending on the size of the department of youth affairs. When you then trickle this down to provinces, you find that it's really dependent upon the HOD of a particular department agreeing to take on a youth project. You do not have a dedicated person or a chief directorate or a directorate at provincial level that deals with youth affairs. Youth affairs is mixed up with a whole lot of other tick boxes that gets given on youth persons with disability and women. Whenever we come to a province and try and say this is a provincial, this is a youth, a particularly youth development program, part of what we struggle with is a dedicated official that gets to be assigned to do that work. But Munchana is not, son of Munchana is not, it's not all doom and doom. Part of what we have, we've got our relationship with NYDA. It's a relationship at the moment that is a few months old, that needs to be now. One of the things that we still have to have is a visioning a session at which we will find each other. The NYD at the moment is focusing mainly on high-end industry, IT, construction, and not necessarily on creative industries. One of the conversations that we're going to be having quite soon is about the use of the NYDA officers at provincial level to also be part of the lobbying group to the provincial departments. It's not only us about the culture that are wanting youth to be recognized in each of the departments, but it's also human settlement, it's also health. When you think of what departments are doing at provincial level, they'll tell you only of internships that they have. They say that's what they are doing for youth and not particularly taking on youth programs. In reaching out, part of our draft strategy department says that we have a preface and a principle that we like to develop youth where they are. The work that we are doing at the moment, the advertisement that's up in the paper at the moment, it's about an audit of committee centers. We need to use those committee centers. We need to know where they are. At the moment, we want that audit to inform us of where the committee centers are. As the chairperson has talked about, the honorable chair has talked about Tanzania. One of the first things that I did when I arrived in this department was to visit Ndanzani and go to the community center in Ndanzani. If you go to that community center at the moment, you find that there are people welding. It's not been used by youth. One of the days, young children and the youth came back from school and went past that facility. My view is that they were supposed to get into that facility to be able to learn a dance, learn music, learn a musical instrument. One of the other things that we're doing at the moment is that through the golden economy, there is a stress that we must prioritize youth. Youth should be the primary target group that is benefiting from this. And then in doing this, we also looked at, in our shareholder contract with our entities, to particularly single out the fact that they'll have to report back on the work that they do for youth, and not only at outreach for youth during Youth Month. I think one of the oversight letters that you took to a place called Batu was an example of some of the things that you're trying to do in looking at youth that are in outlying areas. I think critical, Jefferson and honourable members, the conversation that youth of South Africa need to have in being empowered to even speak, to be able to articulate their needs. The issue of language is not only an issue, but it's the issue of all of the other dynamics of what are they, identification, national identity, how do they articulate their needs. So where we are, we do have various programs, like I mentioned, our entities, the NYDA relationship, and we've just had a meeting not so long ago with Social Development Department to talk about youth and social cohesion, so that we take this forward, and also based on the declarations of the summit that we recently held. Thanks.
The last question I think you responded to.
Did you have a question? It was the issue, if the same I was asking, on the issue of the provincial grants, how are the provincial government informed on what the people want on the ground? And you explained about the IDP, but I think only want you to elaborate more on this.
Yes, there was a look at question about
Thank you, DG, and Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. The issue of rock art, yes, rock art is a collective term used for all the drawings that we find practically in all provinces of South Africa. Through the ages, some of them prehistoric, some of them dating back to the earliest inhabitants in the southern part of Africa. And it talks to the preservation of those sites, the interpretation of those sites, the interaction with the local communities, what the local meanings of those sites are. There are many, some of the very spiritual meanings to those particular sites, and how this talks to the unique position of South Africa in the world. And of course it is also linked to places like the Cradle of Humankind and linked to the Brombos Cave, where not too many years ago they found fragments which proved that not only were the earliest inhabitants coming from the African subcontinent, but that they were engaging in what they call the term escapes me now, analytical thinking and design. In other words, it was not only a question of survival, and then these earliest inhabitants moved into the other parts of the world, and that is where writing and design and interpretation developed. The Brombos Cave with the drawings which were made on fragments which were found proves that even the earliest inhabitants in the southern continent, southern African continent, were able to articulate and to think in abstract. And those findings are enormously important for many of the academic fields. So although it is a very strong focus point in academia, it is not only important for the academics. There is very strong importance for local communities, for South Africa as a whole, and for all the various groups involved in it. But it is a collective noun, a collective term for all the drawings that we find in South Africa, in practically all the provinces. Thank you, Che.
Okay, I know the is explained. I have one question about the museum. Is the international community recognized Cedarbrook? Internationally, what about Africa? I mean, even every year, this time around, you can go to that town. International people from the rest, even
space for you people to stay in accommodation because it's fully booked by international people to teach. I'm glad I'm with asking the question, not me, because I was previously for 5 years there as an MP, and I know exactly what I'm talking about. So we as the committee was there, I think in July, no, we were there. So we know what we're talking about. There was even a study from UCT in that particular, I mean, the department is ahead. They must be actually informed. If you go in the flight and you open the magazine, then you see in the magazine how that area. Thank you very much. If the question was asking, I comment because I'm not comfortable with the answer.
Maybe, Honourable Chairperson, maybe just to say that I think the whole issue of rock art in South Africa probably deserves a separate discussion or a separate follow-up, because it is at various levels and it is cross-cutting as well. In some of the areas, for example, in the Drakensberg, the rock art in the Drakensberg forms part of the Lachlamba Drakensberg World Heritage Site. So the level of protection, awareness raising, knowledge, research, interpretation, preservation is at a very high level. It is at the level of global protection. But this, of course, is not true for all the rock art sites in South Africa. Some of them are at national level, some of them are at provincial and local level, and some of them are hardly known at all. And I think it has to do with the fact that we do not really have an audit of all the rock art in South Africa. Many of the sites are very familiar, but some of them are quite unfamiliar to us, or not familiar at all, only familiar to the local communities. And of course, also because of the South African history and our place in the earliest history of mankind, we have a lot of international visitors and a lot of international researchers in the various areas. So many of those sites are being researched by foreigners, sometimes in collaboration with South Africans, but not even always. So maybe what we do need is a better overall picture of the rock art, the value of rock art in South Africa, and maybe a higher level of awareness of the importance of the rock art. But we do have, I think in general South Africa is doing very well. We have very well protected sites, as I said, not all of them, but with some very well and very well known sites. And globally and more nationally, the importance of the rock art and the history, and this is global history, it's not only South African history, is becoming known. But I do agree that there is much more that can be done in that area. Thank you, Chair.
Somebody
could have it, so it was uncomfortable.
One thing about the other place, as much as we're united, but one thing, when the reserve for the left over is called, the white doesn't want to go to SAA and then to complain, they open the eye and why does they go off? So that's a problem that we have in the last week, because at that point, in some way, we have to be sure of them, you know. Thank you, our members. Thank you. Remember, tomorrow, you know, we have a workshop with the agency. Thank you.